Do you have any ties to the mafia? Are we safe here?
I don't know. Maybe we can get the mafia involved with the marathon the next day.
I'm going to be honest. I think they probably already are. Anything that happens in that city, I don't think happens back there.
Well, if I don't know about it, that's a problem.
Are those things why you chose to debut in New York?
A big reason, yeah. I've never studied like this for a race, and I've heard that, you know, it makes a big difference. Based on the sports scientists our team works with, they still think that most runners are not fueling enough in the race. And so, like, people are going to realize in, like, 5 years, maybe 100 grams of carbs an hour is not that much. Now, being able to, like, the last 12 weeks, 14 weeks, only having raced once, putting together a great training block, it's kind of, like, all gearing towards New York. Like, that's been the goal all along, is the debut in the marathon. So,
and then are you watching The Godfather the night before the race?
3-screen setup. Yeah. Godfather, Goodfellas, and then course preview.
Okay. Like and subscribe.
Coffee club, grind your beans and grab your favorite mug. It's Ollie, Morgan, George, and Gus. It's them boys from Coffee Club. Boys from Coffee Club.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Coffee Club Podcast, episode 204. Today, Ollie and I are so excited to be joined by soon-to-be marathon man, Mr. Joseph Klefka, 7-time Coffee Club guest, breaking all the records. Joe, how you doing?
Pretty good. Starting to taper, so getting a little more energy now. But last 12 weeks have been real, real quiet.
Do you feel? Because I like, it's always weird. You've been running and training so much, and that kind of becomes your equilibrium. Do you actually feel better right now, or do you feel worse? Because I feel like sometimes you feel worse when you run less. You know?
Yeah. No, I think right now I'm at the point where maybe I feel just a little better because we're just starting to rest. But I think that everyone says it starts to feel real odd these next couple of days. So
it's going to pass.
You know, Dathan, like, the rest isn't crazy rest. It's, you know, still pretty.
So you're doing some good workouts.
Still doing
stuff.
Some good work. So,
yeah. Well, Ollie and I are so excited to have John today because, I mean, since he's last been on the pod, so much has happened in his life and everything's been leading up to this amazing debut at the New York Marathon, which is happening in 10 days from now, which is just absolutely crazy to wrap our head around. So what an absolute journey it's been. Before we get into that specific talk, we do have to give, not here with us, but soon to be back, a birthday shout out for George Beamish. It's actually, as we record this right now, it's probably his birthday in New Zealand. It's probably midnight there, I think.
No, it's, what time
it's
is
probably
it right
the morning.
Now?
It's definitely his
it's
birthday.
It's definitely his birthday.
It's like,
yeah,
7 a.m. there probably.
Is he 29 now?
Dude, I don't know. Getting on there. We don't talk about those numbers anymore.
Stop counting the years.
I think after 25, 26,
you just stop counting.
Yeah. Especially as a runner. It's like,
yeah.
No, it's, you don't want to know.
You don't want to know.
Good old Scorpio George.
Yeah. Scorpio.
Scorpio George.
Amazing. So happy birthday to
George. Spending it in New Zealand, so you know he's going to be very excited about that.
You know, he's going to be hanging out with the sheepy sheep and eating some lamb.
Yeah.
On the farm, doing farm things. But we're very excited to have him back soon. But everyone go wish him a happy birthday. And a little warm-up question for Joe. I mean, do you have any ties to the mafia? Are we safe here?
You know, I've watched The Godfather about 15 times, so I feel like that ties me in with the mafia.
Is that, and follow-up question, two parts. How is the, are the pizzas going? And two, are those things why you chose to debut in New York?
A big reason, yeah. You know, I mean, because not just debuting in New York, I was able to go preview the course. And so that gave me an extra 4 days of just pizza for 3 meals a day. Laura was amazed. Like, I actually had pizza 3 meals a day when I was out there. So
insane.
Great fuel. But have you been making it recently, or is it being on the back burner as the training has been?
Yeah, it was the first like 8 weeks I was making it a lot. And then I kind of have fallen off the last couple of weeks, more just ordering from some good pizza spots around town.
I love it. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing. And now you're about to go to the Mecca, so.
Yeah.
I hope
pizza
that,
capital of the
I
world.
I hope that your body after the marathon is in a state where you can enjoy pizza. You know what I mean? Because I think oftentimes it's hard to enjoy anything probably after a race like that.
I'll be able to enjoy it before a little bit too, because I've gotten to the point where my pre-race meal is pizza, so.
Perfect then.
You know.
Damn, it's all worked out.
Ollie and I have done that before. Do you remember in college? Yeah. When we got to race at the Miller's Games in college, we all went out for pizza the night
before. We all went out for pizza because like Mick has his wife, Mary Jo, shout out. She is a New Yorker. Mick is a New Yorker, but he's been in Madison for a little bit. But she knew the spots, the location. Actually, the place we went to is probably run by the mafia, to be honest, Morgs.
I think I saw
that place was a very mafia. Like basement, there. The big leather, like booth curves.
Classic Italian-American.
Like, yeah. Place. Just like the plates of meals were just bigger than the table. It was crazy. Crazy shit.
We have to go there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we can get the mafia involved with the marathon the next day.
Bro. I'm going to be honest. I think they probably already are. Anything that happens in that city, I don't think happens without there.
Well, if I don't know about it, that's a problem.
So. Yeah.
That's true. You need them to be working for you, not against you. But so this year, you've already done so many road races. And as anyone listening knows, I mean, you can do road races. Road races are great. Road races are fun. But the main reason as a professional runner to do road races is all around the marathon. That's the premier event, and it's always such a big time when in a pro runner's career they transition from being, you know, a successful track runner to the roads and eventually the marathon. And we've had the privilege of seeing that unfold in front of our eyes. For you being the man at the center of it all, Joe, how have you felt this experience has gone?
Yeah, so I just looked back, actually. I think New York will be my 9th or 10th race this year, and the shortest race being 10K. So it's a bit crazy to think, like, when I was on the track, you would maybe only want to run, like, 2 10Ks a year, 3 if you really had to. And so it's been a lot of racing this year, and at times, like, in the spring, the races were, like, very solid, but also, like, not to the level I would have like really wanted. And that was hard like in the moment. But Dathan kind of just said, look, like you need to get a lot of experience out here, good or bad. These races are going to teach you a lot. And so it was a bit hard like going into some of these races, like wanting to really like set the world on fire. And then you get in there and it's just like a very like solid day. But it's been good learning experience. And I think that now being able to like the last 12 weeks, 14 weeks, only having raced once, putting together a great training block, it's kind of like all gearing towards New York. Like that's been the goal all along, is the debut in the marathon. So the spring was kind of about gaining experience. And then the last like 14, 16 weeks have been about, you know, really putting in the training to put that experience to the test in New York.
Mm-hmm. And I think anyone that knows you knows that you we're going to enjoy like this style of training and marathon training. And, you know, you did a massive long run workout, 25 miles, just a couple of weeks ago. How's all that been? And also you've had Helen there as well, who we've talked about how wild Helen's training is. And she's been doing the marathon for 3 years now, you know, so she's in a very experienced place with it, and she crushes. But how have those style of workouts been and linking up with Helen kind of?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the training that's always come most natural to me. So like the fartleks, the long runs, my body bounces back like surprisingly quick. It's actually when we've gone back to do some of the VO2 sessions on the track, and like today we were doing some 200s where it's just like, man, I don't know how like this was what I had to do for, you know, the track. Like,
and you did a lot of it.
A lot of it, yeah. And I think you get good at what you train to do. But I think when I was on the track, a lot of that stuff was like riding that line of injury. And like I was, you know, I had some Achilles stuff. And I think a lot of it was from that stuff on the track just wasn't what came natural to me. But now on the roads, doing this style of training, the long runs and this kind of work does come really natural. And that's been exciting because, you know, you look at the training block and Dathan will say like, yeah, this like 25 miles long run, we're going to take it really easy after this because you're going to be very tired. And then I'll get up the next day and feel amazing. Yeah, and then it'll be like, okay, this is a bridge workout. We're just going to do some 200s and some mile repeats. And then I wake up the next morning and I'm like, well, I'm more tired than the 25 mile long run. So it's been fun, but just like figuring it all out. And
so not as bad as maybe you would have thought.
No, not at all. I mean, so
because you've been running massive volume, massive workouts.
Yeah,
like on the track, my volume would rarely get over 110. Like it'd be like 1 week, you know, with things would line up and it'd be like 112, where in this training block, it's been 120 to 125 pretty much every week. And initially that seemed intimidating. Like when I was starting this block, I was just like coming off a sickness. I had like a week I took a couple of days off to kind of reset before this training block. And I was just like, oh, in 2 weeks, I'm running 125 miles that week. Like that sounds insane. And then once we got into it, it really wasn't bad at all. Maybe it's because these sessions are coming a lot more natural. You know, if I was doing like the track training and then trying to do 125 miles, maybe it wouldn't feel as good.
That'd be much more difficult.
Yeah, but it's been really good. And who knows, maybe in the future, we'll even push that mileage up a little bit. I think we'll have to see like after the marathon where we feel like we need to work. But it seems like a lot of marathoners are just like continuing to push the envelope.
You just have to run a lot, I think.
You got to run a lot, but I think with fueling and super shoes, people are like seeing, you know, 120 isn't really like high volume for a marathoner anymore. It's kind of just standard. And so,
that's crazy.
Yeah. So we'll see where it ends up going, but it's been really good.
Yeah. It's really looked like that from the outside. And another aspect of it, which seems to have been really, really positive for you, is the little team that's being assembled to help with the marathon specific training. And speaking specifically about Laura as a coach to help out with that, and also Ryan recently joining the team as a training partner. Maybe you could just kind of introduce them to everyone that's listening that isn't as familiar and kind of what they've been up to.
Yeah, so Laura came on the team kind of in the spring, summer, and the idea was like to really start building out this roads team with athletes, you know, focusing on road racing, either having already done the marathon or working up to the marathon like myself. And so things were a little slow, like getting athletes initially. And so like we were kind of in a holding pattern. It was like Helen, myself, and Laura, but like Helen doesn't really train with me. I don't really train with Helen much. I mean, sometimes, but then in the last like 12 weeks, it's really kicked off. Like we signed Ryan Ford, who didn't debut, but he ran his first time at the Chicago Marathon 209. But it's been good. Like, I think we needed this. Like, as you know, the demands on the road are just different. Like, I think it was hard in the spring trying to like road race following the structure of a track team.
Yeah.
Like the sessions, like I would do a long run on Tuesday, say 20 miles at 5:30, 5:40 pace, and then like try and link up with the guys for a track session on Thursday. And it was just like, I need more recovery than that versus like the track guys maybe just doing 15 miles at around 6 minute pace. It's not going to take as much out of them. So it's been good now where we have Laura, who's like able to facilitate us training with a structure that fits road racing more. Like we're still on OAC. Dathan's still like guiding the ship with training for the most part. But Laura is like able to meet us. Like say today we have a session and we got to go at 7 a.m. and the track team or the people on the track are doing something different. Like we can split up now, where before Dathan's forced and Kelsey are forced to like try and get everyone to link up together. And that's just so hard to do. And it kind of, at some point you're going to compromise, and occasionally it's all right to make those compromises. But when you're doing that for every session, I think it's not going to benefit anyone. So yeah, right now it's me, Helen, Ryan, and Laura, and we should pretty soon be adding at least one new athlete, which I'm really excited about. They've been pretty quick in like identifying talent and wanting to go after people and build this thing out. And so it's been great.
Yeah, that is exciting. Ollie, could be, I heard, sorry, this is kind of an aside. You've been crushing your long runs, Ollie, as well.
There's one long run. Well, I very much, I remember when the team was first kind of like started, Joe was the first guy working with Dathan and like building it. And Dathan's always had that dream for Joe to go to the roads and the marathon. And it's kind of...
It's always been a joke that like Dathan, even though like initially there was no marathon, is like the marathon is Dathan's favorite thing.
Yes, that is true.
All the time. All the time. So then like he was always going to mull Joe into the marathon, and like particularly for the OGs, like Joe was going to take that step first. So
makes sense.
It's crazy. It does. And it's crazy to see where we were 5 years ago to where we are now and how that's been progressing. It's like pretty sick because we think about it and we want it to happen, but like you don't really know. Like it could have gone either way, or like it could have separated. But no, it's pretty sick. I ran a 14-mile long run. That's what I ran. But I've been doing a few weeks of training before everybody else, so I was feeling good. So I thought I'd crush the hill in honor of Joe. But
well, the funny part was that same day, Helen and I met earlier because like we'd just been doing our training at like 7 a.m. and like the thought
just
of running
of things.
The thought of running at 9 a.m. is like we're normally so like late. Sleeping by then.
Yeah,
like, back to
you
bed.
Guys are yeah back in
and so we met earlier like 7:30 or something and ran the same route, but we did 17 at like maybe 5:40 pace or something, pretty good for the hill climb. And then I see like 2 hours later Ollie posts his run like the same pace, but he just started like 2 hours later with Dathan.
Gotta get up for 7 a.m. Ollie.
And the track guys. And so I was like, oh man, he shouldn't just linked up with us. We'd have had a nice little group going.
I was laughing because Dathan was like, you should just run with Joe and Helen. They needed some company. And Helen is obviously like known for just being able like to be right behind Joe clipping. And they're running like 5:30s up like the hill. Like it's very intense stuff. But it was funny because Laura also, she was driving up and she saw me and she's like, you should just come earlier. You're by yourself anyway. Yeah. I was like, damn, like I would have. But the hill climbs would be fun. I reckon as a marathoner, that must be an enjoyable thing too, Joe.
Yeah, that was a fun workout because like normally our long run routes are so like up and down and you get a lot of downhills, uphills, and it's just like very like punchy, where this one is just like a nice consistent hill,
gradual.
Like grind. But
get that rhythm.
No, I think it will be fun to see how it plays out with like you obviously, you know, being like more developed and like if you're going to link up with us a bit more on some strength stuff and same with the women, like would Alicia link up with Helen a bit? Stuff like that I think would be interesting to see. And again, just like how we can benefit each other, because when I step on the track, it's pretty nice to have people like you guys in the VO2 sessions to sit behind, like
Kai as well. Kai's very methodical with stuff.
So that'll be fun to see how we can like benefit each other in that way. But then there's like times where it has to be separate, because like when like before Tokyo, for instance, you guys are at the track every workout.
Yeah, the track gets more intense, and for you guys you're staying in that consistent
road thing. Thought of me doing like a 10-mile session on the track, I'm just like, Dathan, please, like, let's not do this, let's go to the roads.
Well, could you, maybe this is getting ahead of ourselves, maybe we need to check in again after the marathon and see where things are at, but could you see yourself doing more track races or even other stuff like world cross country, something like that?
Yeah, I was thinking about that because, you know, you get into this cycle, ideally, of running, you know, a fall and then a spring marathon. But there is a lot of time, like in the summer, even over the winter, to kind of put in some more like wild card stuff, fun stuff. I mean, to me, I think the marathon is going to be the most fun. Like, that's what I'm most excited for. But yeah, like do stuff that maybe you wouldn't do in a marathon build. And so, like, I was playing with the idea of doing like an indoor 5K. I know I was saying this last year and it didn't end up panning out, but I think a lot will depend on after New York, which road races am I going to end up putting on the calendar, and then seeing if anything can like fit around that.
Yeah.
But
I think it is, it's probably hard because you want to do it, but then once you move up to the marathon, it's like, okay, so yeah, you're going to have these at least two marathons on the calendar, and that's where you make the big bucks. That's where, like, you know, those are the big focuses. And then yeah, you just got to see what you can build around it that makes sense. But then also there's probably going to be other road races that are going to be offering you appearance fees or have good prize money that you want to do
The other part of it too is like to step on the track and do a 5K, it's so different from what I'm doing right now. Like I haven't worn spikes in like, you know, 6-8 months. Not that I'm worried about like putting them on and running a 5K, but, and then the other part of it too is like when you've run 12:50s, the thought of like, what if I go out there and run 13:15? Like, that doesn't really fire me up. It kind of makes
me get you excited.
Yeah, it doesn't get me excited the same way. So, but if I went out and ran like a road 5K and ran 13:15, it'd be like, all right, that's sick.
That's really good.
So, I think that's why it would be hard to get back on the track, is just like you're always sacrificing something for every race. Like, there's always a trade off. You could do this or you could do that. And so it's like, what are you going to choose?
Totally. And so honing in on what's upcoming in next week, how are we feeling just in general going into the race? And I don't know if you have anything like, I mean, you've been so dialed in, you've gone to the course, you've been studying it. Do you have any specific kind of race plans or ways that you're going about and thinking about it going into the actual race day?
Yeah. So I think one thing that's very different about this race and maybe like how I want to race in the future, is like I tried for the first time doing a road race with no watch, in Twin Cities, and it was great because I was so focused on the competition. And I think I found it early on in my road racing, like in the spring. I'm always like looking at my watch and like thinking, okay, if I'm running this pace, I should feel this way. And mm-hmm. the other people should be falling off if we're running this pace. And then you get on the roads and like us in Houston, you know, is like, dude, yep. we're ripping right now. And like, everyone's still here. We're getting dropped. And mm-hmm. so it's like demoralizing. So the big thing going into New York has been not really looking at the watch much at all. And the coaches will tell me that, but then I see Helen and it's like, I don't think she has ever thought about it. Like, not thought, like she doesn't finish her rep and say, you know, what was my split? I don't even know if she's like splitting her watch. Like she just finishes the rep and it's like, okay, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And then like the long runs, we're all like mesmerized by her pace. And I don't think she's thinking about it at all. I feel like she's more concerned with like the effort she gave, how hard she was pushing, you know, whatever. And so I've kind of tried to channel that a little bit, like using the pace as like a guideline, like to start the workout. And then from there, just kind of see how you feel and go off that. So I think in New York too, because of the hills, because of no pacers, trying to like run a pace or focus on a pace at all is a bit ridiculous. And so for me, I've chunked the race into segments and kind of looked at it like, okay, out of 10, how aggressive can I be in this section? All right, now we're getting to this part of the course. Well, we can be a little more aggressive here. And then as the race progresses, okay, we can be a little more aggressive here. And so that's what I've kind of looked at. And Laura's been really good at that because she's run New York, you know, a couple times, I think. And she mentioned how like, yeah, this part of the course, like people will go too hard and then they end up coming back. You think you're kind of near the finish, but you're not. You got this coming up ahead of you. And so really just chunking the course into segments and using like kind of relative effort to like guide mm-hmm. me. And mm-hmm. so like it could be mile 10 and you got to let people go because you have your governor on and you're like, all right, like I'm not going harder than this right now. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it pays off towards, you know, mile 22 or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you see it all the time, especially in a race like New York that has like the hills and all that stuff. There's people who go out crazy at the front, but then there's a lot of people who you see racing these really more tactical, smart races, and they often come through and get really big rewards because of that. So I think it's hard to do that. It does take a lot of discipline and takes a lot of knowledge of the course, and especially for your first time marathon, because it would take a lot, like experience, you would imagine, helps with that a lot as well.
I think it takes a lot of trust too, that you will be able to do what you want to do. Like by holding back early, you got to say like, okay, like I might be letting some people go, but I'm trusting that, you know, this is going to pay off. And that's how we've run our long runs. The route we do on our long run is like pretty scary, how it mimics the New York course in a lot of ways, like where the hills are placed and stuff. And so it's been good to kind of visualize these things and be like, okay, this is the section where we can be a little more aggressive. But then even having Ryan, you know, he was 11th in New York last year and he was like, dude, I went out really conservative and I didn't even feel like I was picking it up, but I was running by people like they were standing still. Like he was in 23rd, I think, at halfway and then finished 11th. So
wow.
Like it does happen. Mm-hmm. You got to trust it.
Yeah. That faith is really important.
That's hard.
Yeah.
That's hard.
Wow.
So you don't have experience yet in the marathon distance, but one thing that you do have some experience with going into this race is racing against a lot of the people that are going to be in the field, in particular, the Americans, because, mm-hmm. you know, you've been against them on this whole kind of circuit. So are you going to be thinking much about, like, will you be using them as kind of to help guide you through the race as well?
Yeah, I think that you look at this field on paper and it's just like so stacked that it can be a bit overwhelming. And so I tried to simplify, or I'm going to try and simplify on race day, like the people I've raced. So yeah, obviously the Americans I've all raced. But then you have guys like Patrick Dever, who's been, you know, on the circuit here a lot, that you can key in on too. So I do want to like kind of key on what they're doing. And kind of my thought process is like, say I want to be top American. That's a big goal for anyone doing New York as an American. And so my thought is like, the first 16 miles or so, I need to like run the average of what all the Americans are doing. I think the American field is like 8 or 10 people. and just run the average of what they're doing. So if Hillary or Bia like shoots off the front, like, yeah, it's going to make you have to be slightly more aggressive, but what are the other seven Americans doing?
Mm-hmm.
And so try and run the average, knowing that if you do that, you're going to run like the most even race. And then hopefully, you know, the last 10K, you can become the top American.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how I'm looking at it. Again, like that doesn't include pace at all. Like there's nothing about pace. There's nothing about splits. I think it's really keying off the other people and then keying off like how aggressive you're willing to be in certain parts of the course.
Yeah. Just racing, baby. Just getting back to the
good old pure racing.
Yeah. I see, it is just pure racing, but trying to gain the knowledge of the course, like having, yeah. I've run it on an easy run. Like when I went out there before my build, but it's like, I'm watching the video of the course every day, like studying it. And then I'm hearing from Laura, like, you know, this part of the course, this will happen or this often happens. And so it's like, I'm trying to piece together all this information. And like, every time I watch the video of the race, I'm trying to think like, all right, what am I doing here? What could happen here? And so I'm hoping on race day, like I at least feel a bit prepared for what might happen, what could happen. But obviously the race, you never know.
Yeah, dude, it's such a hard one because I remember us going into Houston feeling pretty prepared and then the gun went off and I felt completely unprepared.
Yeah, that's a good
point. Do you remember that feeling?
Yes, I remember that feeling. But I also remember in the press conference, they asked us like, how much do you study before the race, your competitors, the course? And I remember Mance being like, oh, more knowledge is always better. You always want to know what you're doing. And I was like, oh, I don't do anything.
Yeah.
And so I looked at that and I was like, way, yeah. Oh, and then Mance ran like 59:10. So maybe I need to learn more before the race. So that's why like New York, I've never studied like this for a race. And I've heard that, you know, it makes a lot of, it's important in New York. It makes a big difference, but it's also been fun too. Like I just enjoy watching the YouTube video every day of the course.
That's why I love the marathon in a similar way to, you could say like a race such as NCAA Cross where it's, you're just training for so long for one specific thing. I guess on the track you are doing as well, but on the track there's other races which are like really big as well. Whereas with a marathon, it's like, it's the marathon.
And it's kind of like an MMA fight where you're training, like,
exactly.
You know, you hear
you're
about
preparing
this fight,
your mind, your
like,
body.
Yeah, like 9 months off in the distance and your training is very geared towards the race. You
could
know?
Do like, I've seen where people would do like a 10K race like 4 weeks before the marathon and they do terrible, but it doesn't matter. Then they go crush that marathon.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everything's just like.
Also, track races are always the same.
Yeah.
The track is usually the same.
That's true.
Like the weather is dependent, but your track is always the same. You're running New York, Chicago, always so different. Like just different. And you
it's
have
wild.
To learn, like that kind of is
elements.
Really interesting. It's, mm-hmm. It's pretty, I think it's pretty sick. I mean, like you said, Morgan, for cross country, like when it's at Madison or whether it's at like Terre Haute, like people know where the sections are. It's like, this is where things are going to happen, where people progress. That's kind of like the starting point for a lot of those top marathoners, I imagine.
It's kind of funny. The other day I was walking my dog and my neighbor was out there and he was like, oh, like, what are you training for? I'm like, I'm getting ready for New York. And he's like, oh, I used to live on the course. And I was like, oh, like, where did you live? And he like mentioned where he lived. And like, I'm like, oh yeah, like right next to this and this. Like I knew exactly where it was. And I think he was a bit creeped out. But I'm like, oh no, I've watched a YouTube video of the race like every day for like weeks now.
Well, speaking of your intimate knowledge of New York, one thing that's really, I think, just like cool that you're getting to debut at New York is your personal attachment to New York. Because as a team, you know, we've really like had so many positive memories in New York and specifically like the marathon weekend, going out to watch so many times. And yeah, you just as an individual, like you love New York. What was the process of deciding and ultimately choosing to do New York as your debut?
Yeah, that's a good question. But actually one thing, like you were just saying, what I thought about today was how well our team has done in New York, from the Millrose Games to the New York City Marathon, to Fifth Ave Mile. Like we've done very well in New York. And so that actually gave me like some confidence today when I was thinking about that. I was like, oh yeah, like you've raced in New York. Because everyone's like, oh, it's your first time racing in New York. I'm like, no, like I've run Millrose, I've run Fifth Ave, like I've been here before. But
it's kind of our home, but like home, like
field.
So, like, if you're thinking of a field.
Yeah, so kind of, and we've been there for Helen. So it's like we've been there so much. But the process of choosing, like once we knew we wanted to do a fall. So basically I started in the spring racing. And the races were, you know, Houston in hindsight was really good. Like I can look at a 61 flat and be very happy about that for a debut in the half. In the moment, it felt like, oh gosh, I got crushed.
Yeah.
But it was good. And then so, you know, we go on racing through the spring, whatever. And the races were good, bad, you know, decent. But then the one we used was Grand Rapids, the 25K. And we were like, okay, if we can like have a positive experience here, we'll debut in the fall. And so I went into that race and had a very, very good day. I was second to Casey Klinger, but we were like a minute under the existing American record. It was a really good race. So we decided to do a fall, which kind of narrows it down in the US to Chicago and New York. And based on what we learned about Houston, like that's a very flat, fast course, similar to Chicago. And like you said, the gun went off and we felt like we had no clue what we were doing out there. I think that was an accurate way to describe it. I kind of told, you know, I told Dathan, I was like, look, I look at Chicago as like very similar to Houston and I'd be very scared to like debut there. And so that led me to New York. And it's funny now I get all these people asking like, you know, why'd you choose New York? It's the hardest major. Like it's the toughest course. And to me, every marathon's going to be hard if you're running your best. Like if you're running, totally. So I'm like, I wanted to see where I could be the most successful in my debut. And I felt like that was going to be New York. And coincidentally, I watched Sydney and I was like, gosh, this race looked fun too.
Sydney, yeah.
Sydney looked amazing. Sydney
was, we got a debut.
Yeah.
That's where we're debuting.
That's a really hardcore.
Oh, yeah. Really hard. It's actually, it's similar in a way to New York with the hills, but they have pacers. And the race just looks so fun.
Like, yeah. And you finish like right cool near the stuff. Opera House and like you go over the bridge. And I've like run recently along that bridge and it's like really nice, like very nice to run across. It's very, very,
there are some hills they were well running done. Up and it was like, if the hill looks steep on camera, you know, it's just like crazy.
Very hilly.
So no, but yeah, it was going to be in the US. And so then in the spring, or in the fall, it just came down to those two.
Yeah. Makes sense.
And I really wanted it to be in New York because of those factors. Like, if I had to push it to this spring, I'd have been a little more scared to debut in Boston just because again, it's very hard, like with the point-to-point course, the weather, you know, you could have a tailwind, people hammer that first half marathon. It's just a lot more factors of like not knowing what to do out there. And so I think New York is a great place to debut. I think Laura debuted there and did very well. So there's been a number of people where that's been the case. And so I'm hoping I can continue.
Well, I'm excited.
I'm very excited. I just feel like, it's like you watch a TV series and you're getting to like the really good season.
Yeah,
that's what I feel like
you're
right now.
Towards the end of the season,
and it's getting to like the really like
the action is happening.
The action is happening, and things are starting to fall into place, and it's nice. I think most of the team's going to be out there too, which is really exciting. Obviously, we went out last year, like Joe mentioned, to watch Helen, and like
we've been out the last few years.
I think last two years.
Yeah, and like when you get there and you're like a spectator, you think it's going to be a party, but you go and you're like, this is like the environment is amazing. Like people are going crazy. And like I imagine that's going to be such a positive experience for you as well, like running through, and it's going to be sick. I'm really excited.
I was on the lead vehicle last year with Hillary, and I think we were both like blown away by it. And so we like knew this is where we wanted.
Yeah,
to
this is where you're
like the course is. It's just crazy. Like especially where you guys were at last year in Williamsburg. That's like a very high energy part of the course.
Yep.
So
I tell you what's a little like kind of Easter egg thing. Like it's like this doesn't actually matter at all, but I love it about New York Marathon is that it's always like the day of the daylight savings switch.
Yeah.
So then it's an early morning, but you get an extra hour of sleep.
You got to watch the Seinfeld episode.
The Seinfeld episode. I was thinking about that. What are you going to do with the alarm clock situation?
I know, dude. I'm actually like having watched that episode a couple times, I'm actually like stressed about that. But
you need to have days and like just like sleep at your door and then just like knock on the door.
No, whatever coach is at these road races, I tell them, I'm like, call me like six times that morning to make sure I'm up.
Yeah.
Like, cause I'm so scared of oversleeping. Cause New York fortunately is like a 9 a.m. start, but you got to get on the bus at like, I think it's like 5:30 a.m.
Yeah.
Like it's
you gotta
crazy.
Go all the way out there.
Yeah. You got to bus all the way out there.
It's crazy.
So it'll be an early morning, but yeah, it'll be fun.
You're used to it by now.
Yeah. You get used to the early mornings and you get your routine down, which is takes
about.
A while, but
ready to go. Well, we do also have some very exciting celebrity questions that have been sent in. I think we'll start off right here.
Oh gosh.
Coffee Club.
Oops.
Joe, what is your favorite part?
I don't know if you recognize
Hi, Coffee
who this
Club.
Is.
Joe, what is your favorite part of the New York City Marathon course, either from when you were on the lead vehicle last year or from when you ran the course this year?
That's a good question.
Hi, Coffee Club.
Sorry. Thank you, Wifey.
Hi, yeah, Sage.
Thank you, Sage. No, that's a good question because I think the start is iconic. Over the Verrazano Bridge. There's no spectators. It's just this huge cannon. Like, funny story, last year I was watching the start and I was right in front of the cannon and it blew on my ear and I thought I had hearing loss.
I didn't know there was a cannon involved in this.
Yeah, there's a cannon.
And then they play that Frank Sinatra song. So it's just like, amazing. It was so cool. So the start over the Verrazano Bridge is crazy. But then for some reason, I don't know what it is, the bridge from Brooklyn into Queens right at the half marathon mark, I've always loved. Like, I've run it a few times now and every time I go up and over it, I'm just like, this bridge for some reason just feels great.
Mm.
So I like that.
What's the name of the facility? That's the way, Ocean Breeze.
That's where you warm up. Yeah.
Good.
Damn, that's good.
Well.
That's going to be back. Actually, that's good crazy,
memories.
Joe, because I'm pretty sure that was one of your first races.
Yeah, that was me and Morgan showdown.
Yeah, 2 mile.
There.
Two and three.
You two, Justin Knight, and somebody else.
That was the day Ollie like just had the on day like during COVID. Is we're not much. That was
nothing was going on.
Nothing was going on. There was 10 people in the stands.
It was a very strange.
It was one of the craziest races I've ever seen.
Do you remember staying at the Newell? I think we were staying.
We couldn't get food. Remember, we had to DoorDash
hotel.
We were next to the airport. Did you run over? I think you ran over to get food from the airport.
Yeah, from the airport because it's better than that.
It was brutal.
Yeah. Oh, that was funny.
It's crazy. You have all these memories.
Yeah, you're going to have everything linked up in your career.
You're going to be, I wonder how much, because the marathon is, you have to distribute your energy. I mean, obviously, like any race, you're going to be very focused and very dialed in the whole way. But I wonder how much you, like, when even like the best, you see them running past, for example, when we've been cheering on Helen, like she'll wave to the GS section and stuff.
No, that's a good...
I don't know if you're going to... Do you think you'll be able to take that other stuff in or you'll be so locked in?
That's a good question because one thing I've always been like incredibly fascinated about New York is just how big it is and where everything is. And so like I have all these points on the course now where I'm like, oh yeah, like that's where Laura and I stayed when we jogged the course. And then this is where the pizza place I went to when I met up with Tom. And like, so along the course, I have all these points now where I've like done things. And so it's so cool to see him connected. And Owen's like, yeah, my apartment's at 10K. So I'm like running the course and I'm like, oh, Owen's apartment here.
Yeah.
Pizza here.
10K, sweet.
Hotel where I say that there. Yeah. And so like I have all these points on the course where I like know these things. And then, you know, you have the Fifth Ave mile, which is kind of towards the end. I'll be a bit out of it by then. But I feel like because it's New York and because I've been there so many times and because I am like fascinated with like kind of exploring the different areas of New York, it will be cool to like be out there and you just connect it all, like the marathon, you know, it's five boroughs, so
Yeah, I feel like it's a good thing that you have so much experience because it's going to be, you're going to be able to kind of take it in, but it won't be like overstimulating or anything. Mm-hmm. You'll just be able to like, it's just familiar.
Yeah, honestly, I'm hoping it's exciting. Like when I'm at like mile 7, I'm like, all right, I got to get to Williamsburg now.
Yeah.
Like got to get to Leon's Bagels, you know? Like,
get to the bagel shop.
Get to the bagel shop and then get to the bodega where I met the cat when I went to the bathroom that one time on my run.
Amazing. It's going to be so good.
Yeah,
you're going to have a lot of fun out there. All right, a second celebrity question.
All right, Joe. Would you rather get fifth place next weekend in the New York City Marathon or guarantee a Vikings Super Bowl in the next 5 years? And if you would rather take fifth place, at what place would the crossover happen? So at what place would you rather... Guaranteed
what a
question. Super Bowl. Good luck this weekend.
I already knew that question. Like when he started that, I knew that's where that question was. Honestly, this is going to sound crazy because I'm like a diehard Vikings fan and, you know, they've been very disappointing this year. And so I've kind of just detached myself from that. Like I had like a great workout.
It's bringing you down too much.
Yeah, no, like I'll have a great workout and then watch the Vikings just be disappointing. And then it's like, Wait, I can't let this bring me down. Like I had a great workout today. I can't let the Vikings bring down my mood. And so honestly, I think I've completely separated the two. Like, would I rather be fifth? 100%.
That's okay.
100% I'd rather be fifth.
You've done your time as a Vikings fan. You've given them everything.
I've suffered for 28 years.
This one's for you.
Like my dad has suffered for 74 years. I think I can take it. I think I can just suffer
this year
with the Vikings.
For Joe.
Yeah, I think I could suffer. I could never have a Vikings, you know, Super Bowl if it meant like podium at the New York City Marathon, I think.
There you go. You heard it here first. If Joe podiums, the Vikings will never win a Super Bowl.
And that's okay.
That'll be the curse. That'll be the curse.
Yeah.
It'll all come back to this.
The day they break the curse, then I'll just retire.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing. Yeah. It's been tragic, I think, for you, especially because the Vikings got really good as well.
Yeah.
Oh, this is what they do. Like, so they played tonight. You know, they're so disappointing last week. And I'm just ready for them I want them to disappoint again tonight because they're going to try and like reel me back in.
Who are they playing tonight?
You're not going to fall for it.
They play the Chargers. They're super injured, but you just know someone's going to like have the game of their life and you'd be like, oh yeah, we're back. We're back.
Yeah. Sam Darnold's the QB right now, right?
No. He's with the Seahawks now.
Wait, who's
Carson Wentz.
Oh, Carson. But, and then JJ, because JJ was like...
JJ McCarthy's hurt.
Yeah. And his other game was, he was a bit timid. Yeah, I remember watching that game.
Wasn't great, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... I had to separate the two because... So I have season tickets to the CU Buffs as well. And again, I'm pretty diehard with them as well. And I had to just commit during this build-up. I'm like, I can't go to a single game.
Yeah, like, I can't do it to
myself. I'll watch them on TV, but I can't go.
Can't bring myself down.
Also, because it's like, coincidentally, the training would be like 25-mile run and Buffs play at 1.
Yeah,
good luck.
Yeah, far out.
Amazing. All right, moving on to our next celebrity question.
All right, Joe, this question goes all the way back to your old high school days as a sneakerhead. What is your favorite pair of shoes that you've ever collected, whether it's a pair of basketball shoes or a pair of running shoes, and why were they your favorites?
Wow. All right, Joe. That's a great question. I collected a lot of shoes back in the day. I worked in high school at a running store. I worked at a nursing home, and I mowed lawns. And so I was very busy working to get money to buy shoes. And some of the shoes were very expensive and like, way more. I can't believe I spent as much as I did on some of these shoes back in the day. But
I love that.
Probably my most prized pair of shoes I had these Blake Griffin Galaxy player exclusives that never got released.
Oh my God.
And I remember, I want to say I spent like around $900 on them at the time, which is like insane.
It's an investment.
And I remember I only had at the time like $500, but my paycheck was coming next week. And so I convinced my brother, I'm like, John, can you give me $400 so I can buy these?
Short-term loan.
And short-term, and then I'll pay you back next week. And so that was like the rarest pair I probably had.
What are they worth now? They're surely worth a shit.
Like, probably like less somehow. You know,
really?
I probably just got hosed. But
if they never got released.
Yeah.
Sometimes sneakers do that though. They can go up in value or they can just crash out and you're like, wow, this is a...
Yeah, I've looked back. And then maybe also the LeBron 9 Galaxy. That was a shoe I had like four pairs of. I liked it so much.
Oh, wow.
Which
that's
felt
sick.
Unnecessary.
What a lifestyle. Do you still have them all at home?
No, I have one pair. I've kept one pair. I sold them all kind of when I went to college and I was able to kind of cash out of it a bit.
Businessman.
I probably didn't get as much as I put into it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you can't. But it was for the love.
Yeah.
It was such a love in the memories. It was an experience, you know?
Like meeting up with people, like buying shoes is like you did not know who you were going to meet up with. People would be like in the groups talk about, oh, I got robbed from this person. And you just didn't know what you're going to get.
Shit.
So far we've had questions from your wife, Sage, and then also some high school teammates, Owen and Reed. This one, you might have to explain to the people listening who this is, because I didn't know who this was either.
I'm curious.
Joe, would you rather have a side stitch, much like the Twin Cities 10-miler, or would you rather have a vomiting experience like Bob Kempton, also a former Hopkins athlete, in this week's New York City Marathon?
You have to explain that question.
Yes, so that's my high school coach who, like, I credit a lot of where I'm at today to him because he managed my progression so well. He coached me since seventh grade. And through high school from seventh grade. But I remember I wanted to be on the high school team in seventh grade. And he told me I had to be top 12 in a time trial to get on the team because he didn't want to like just pull me up like unfairly to other people. And so I remember I got 12th place and I was able to train with the high school team. And like he just did a great job of managing my career. But the question, Bob Kempinen was an Olympian in the marathon from Hopkins as well. And then, yeah, at Twin Cities 10 mile with a mile to go, I got a little bit of a stitch in my diaphragm. And
classic size stitch.
Yeah, it kind of wrecked me a little bit. But that, to the question, I think if I had to choose between the two.
Wait, what was the second part of the question? He said he's experience at New York or something?
No. So Bob Kempinen, there's a famous photo we can, maybe you can link, of him vomiting, I believe, at the Olympic trials. And then he ended up winning and made the team.
But
this photo is like, he's just like full on like vomiting. Yeah. It's disgusting. But then he made the Olympic team, or I think it was the Olympic trials. So, but to the question, which would I rather have? I would say the vomiting, because that would mean I'm probably not getting a side stitch if that stuff is out of me. You know?
Also, he won. So that
also, he did
win.
Well. Yeah. And I had to kind of chill the last mile in Twin Cities. So that's what I would
say. So if you feel something, just get it out.
Just get it out of you.
And then hopefully you feel good after it.
Exactly.
And you will be able to replenish.
Yeah, I can rally.
Yeah, I'll take my gel.
Yeah. Yeah. Just refill. All right. I don't know who this question is.
Hey, Coffee Club. This is Ollie Hall here.
Look at this week.
I have a question for Joe Klecker. Massive fan, by the way. Excited for New York. Think you're going to crush it. I have a question. I heard just, you know, through the grapevine that I think it's mentioned that 3 liters of fluid is taken in during a marathon, and that's a lot of fueling. It's a lot different than usual 10K or any of the other races you've done previously. I want to know how you've been managing that in training and how that's been going for you, mate. All the best. Hope to see you soon, and I hope you're enjoying Coffee Club. Cheers, mate.
Who's that?
I know, some random guy. He must be a fan of the pod or something.
Is that true? 3 liters?
Yeah.
That
so
sounds
we
like
get,
so
we,
much.
We get 7 bottles on the course, and my bottles are all 400 milliliters. So it'd be about 2,800 milliliters, so just under 3 liters, but
that blows my
essentially.
Mind.
Is that insane?
Which is crazy to think about, because I didn't realize it was that much. And I was talking to Jason yesterday, and I was like, wait, a 2-liter bottle of Coke is
it's like this. Yeah.
So then you have
this.
That.
Is about a liter.
Yes.
Yeah, so this looks like a big bottle.
3 of those.
Imagine that inside you.
I can't.
No, it's been interesting. I think that you hear about like how much fueling. Yeah, I feel like we're in a fueling revolution with sport, and cyclists are leading the way, and it's trickling down to running, and you're seeing how important it is. And then you got like people like David Roach who are doing a lot of science experiments on themselves that are fun to follow with fueling. And so I've like,
what's your approach?
My approach is that based on the sports scientists our team works with, they still think that most runners are not fueling enough in the race. And so this graph that one of the people, I believe at Morton, showed me was like, if you're taking in 100 grams of carbs an hour, on average, most people's like glycogen stores, or they'll start burning fat, or their fat metabolism will take over their carb metabolism, which is a lot slower at like, say, 22 or 23 miles. And that's if you take in 100 grams of carbs an hour, which is thought to be like a very high amount right now.
Totally.
And so I'm like, well, maybe I need to push those limits a little bit. I'm someone who my stomach has always been very strong and I've never had issues. So I've been doing, in each of my 7 bottles, I do about 50 to 55 grams of carbs, which would add up to like, what, 50 times 7 is 350 over the course of the race, which would put you at about more like 175 an hour, depending on when you finish the race, I guess. But
Big numbers,
but it's been amazing in training. Like we did our 25 mile run, and I've used all these runs to mimic exactly the fueling strategy I'm going to do in New York with caffeine, timing, like even my fueling from when I wake up, I do the exact strategy, every workout, every long run. And so, and then Laura's on the bike giving us the bottles right at 5K, 10K, 15, et cetera, all 7 bottles. And it's been great. Like, when we did that 25 mile long run, and then my last 5 miles were meant to be marathon effort. And with kind of my training mentality right now, I didn't look at my watch once. I was like, I'm just going to go on this loop and run what I think is marathon effort. And at the end, I looked at it and I was running from mile 20 to 25, 450 per mile. And my first 20 were at 520.
Wow.
And so I was like, and I felt amazing. Like my legs felt poppy, springy. If I had to go run a 420 mile, I felt like I could have done it. And I'm like, this has to be fueling. Like, why am I so fresh? you know, 2 hours into this run where I can just all of a sudden go run 450 pace. And so I've found that the fueling is incredibly important. And I think that it is going to be like people are going to realize in like 5 years, maybe 100 grams of carbs an hour is not that much. You know, you're seeing it with the cyclists. So why is it different for running? Mm-hmm. I know stomaching it is the hard part.
It's harder for runners, yeah.
But I think it's trainable. Like,
yeah.
I took the David Roach approach. I saw one time he said he would like chug a huge bottle.
Yeah.
And then do his rep right away.
Yeah.
And so whenever I'd have a track workout, I'd do that. And Laura was like, you're ridiculous for this. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And so like today, I just, you know, chug 50 grams of carbs in about 10 seconds and then gone.
Now the bottles, I think, are a game changer. Cause like I try, like, I mean, all of us now are pretty into the high carb lifestyle, whatever you want to call it. And like we have gels and the drink mixes, but with the drink mixes, you can really, mm-hmm. you can go ham on it. And it would be like the one thing that we don't do, which it would be really good to do this at some point in our lives, is to actually get in a lab. And because you can do studies on how much your body is actually able to absorb.
Yeah.
That would be something that would be really interesting to see. But I'm sure it is, as you said, something that you can change and train over time.
So it's a bit, what we've seen with like the sports scientists is that like the more carbs you take in, the less efficiently you actually metabolize them. But if you're taking in, say, 100 grams of carbs and you're metabolizing 80% of them, that's 80 grams of carbs.
Mm-hmm.
If you're taking in 170 grams of carbs and you're metabolizing 60% of them, that's still more than 80. Is that more? It's more than 80 grams.
But
like, that's like how the theory works is totally. Like, even though you're less efficiently metabolizing these carbs, the more you take in,
which makes sense,
you're still getting in more carbs and that's saving your glycogen stores, preventing you from switching over to more of a fat metabolism that is much more inefficient.
Yeah. I mean, we should always, whenever we talk about this stuff, it's like, there's always a disclaimer that like, we're just like athletes. We're not like scientists, but,
yeah,
I mean, you can feel you
regurgitating the science.
Yeah, but when you feel the anecdotal evidence is so strong, and I think it's really probably another thing that's so individual. So if you feel like it works well for you, then it works well for you, and it's like kind of that simple. And the science does always seem to like come after the, you know, the people out there doing it in practice. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the science, as you said, does kind of like start to reveal some maybe different stuff in the next 5 years. But for now, if it feels good, it's like, yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's why we're doing what we are doing, because as we've gone this 12 weeks, we've been tweaking it every workout, every long run, and we've gotten to this point where this has been what seems optimal.
Yeah.
Like we were experimenting with much higher caffeine and we had to like dial that back quite a bit.
Really? So. What did that feel like? We just jittery. Well,
so we were doing 80 grams per bottle, which 80 times 7 plus 100 before the race. So it was like 600 milligrams of caffeine. And it was like, it was just too much. Like the stomach was just like turning over in knots. I just felt like I had like the flu or something.
Yeah,
but I felt good. Physically, like legs, everything.
Running
was like,
good.
Like running felt great, but it was too risky where it was like, you know, I have to like stop and feel like I'm going to puke. So probably don't do that. So then we tweak it from there. And so it's like, yeah, the science was telling us, try and do this if you can. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't do it. So again, lab is different from real world.
Yeah,
totally. And for our final celebrity question, we have an extremely special one.
Hey, Coffee Club Podcast. This is Eric Holt. I'm out here in beautiful Manhattan, New York City. And my question for Joe Klecker is simple. Day before New York City, where do you go to eat in New York City and what do you get?
Maybe you already answered that.
Yeah, good question. What I've found is that like these pre-race dinners, it's always pasta. And pasta's fine, but if I'm in New York, I'm going to order a pizza.
Totally.
And, you know, I have my spots that I like, more of like a style. Like I try and go for like a Neapolitan style the night before a race and, you know, just do your research and find one that will deliver to your hotel.
Yeah,
totally.
And then are you watching The Godfather the night before the race?
Oh yeah, I have The Godfather. So I have like three screen setup: Godfather, Goodfellas, and then course preview.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah,
amazing.
You heard it here first.
Do you have any plans for like New York specific plans for post race? Are you staying there another day?
Yeah, so I'll be there till Tuesday. And actually, it's great timing that the Timberwolves play Brooklyn the following night. So I'm going with Tom and Owen and Sage and probably Tom's fiance to the game.
Yeah,
so
we're going to
go watch the Timberwolves play the Nets.
Hell yeah.
Wow. Going to be such a good trip.
Yeah.
It's just, it is. So, like, I think comparing it to an MMA fight like you did before is so apt because it is, it's like such an exhibition. And like the great thing about having an event that's like that is then, yeah, like everything around it is all like planned or directing you into this one specific thing.
Yeah.
It's so exciting.
Like a year ago or even, you know, when I was there, just seeing like the New York Roadrunners, like the event they put on. It's just like ridiculous. Like there was a sheet with everyone's flights and like when they had to catch a shuttle bus. And I kid you not, like there are probably 1,000 people on that list. It's not just athletes, it's coaches, agents, physios, you know, all of the journalists probably. And so it's like, it is this whole event.
It's like a circus. Like,
yeah. And then like apparently the dinner the night after New York is like insane. Like they have a, I didn't go last year because I was I was invited, but you know, I was hanging out with the team.
You're
and
busy.
Celebrating, you know, Helen and everything. So
didn't Helen, was it last year? Didn't she get invited to go to, was it a Jets game or something?
No, that was 2 years ago she won.
Yeah, that
they
would
were
make
playing
sense.
On Monday night. I want to say it was Monday Night Football the following day, and she was on the field and took a photo with Aaron Rodgers because she won the women's, and then I forget who won the men's, but they took a photo with Aaron Rodgers, and I was like, pretty sure Helen has no clue who this is, and pretty sure Aaron Rodgers has no clue who Helen is.
Yeah.
So it's pretty funny. But then, like, if you are a football fan and a running fan and you see this, it's like,
epic crossover.
Yeah, it's like your world's colliding. So.
Yeah. Oh, so good. So good. Well, I mean, we're so happy that we've been able to have you on just to check in because this is a big, this has been a big transition period for you. And it is really exciting to be along for the ride. And we're very excited for you. And we wish you the best of luck with it, and yeah, be cheering for you the whole way. Is there anything, any final words that you'd like to say to the fans before heading into this race from the Coffee Club? All the Coffee Club fans are going to be out there cheering for you.
Yeah, they're all going to be out there.
All of them.
They're all flying in.
You're flying them all out?
Yeah. That's how we do it.
All 500,000 of them.
Good.
Either all of us go or none of us go.
Yeah. That's how it works.
Travel in a pack. That's why there's like a million people out on the course, I think, is because Coffee
That's about our fan base.
Yeah. No, not really. Just like that I'm very excited I don't know. I've never been like this far out from a race and been feeling so ready where it's like, I'm not even like caring about the training anymore. It's like, I know I'm ready to go. And it's just kind of like ticking the boxes. And I just want to get into the race and execute.
It's a really good feeling.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Not even like concerned with the result. I'm like, if I go and execute, you know, fueling, pacing strategy, all that, I'm like, I think it's going to go really well. And that's what's exciting about it. So.
Amazing. Well, on that note, I think we can wrap up. Once again, say thank you so much for coming on, and best of luck in New York next week. It's gonna be so epic. But thank you guys so much for listening and watching as well. This has been episode 204 of the Coffee Cup Podcast, and we look forward to seeing you guys all again next week. See ya. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Damn, I'm fired up now. Yeah, that was